Leading on the Edge. Extraordinary stories and leadership insights from the world's most extreme workplace by Rachel Robertson. Read by Lucy Patterson. Preface. I don't know exactly what it was that woke me up that time. It could have been the crash of my laptop as it slid off the table onto the floor. It might have been the crunch of my neck as I yet again slid up the bunk and whacked my head on the bulkhead. Perhaps it was the series of ship's noises as the icebreaker crested the 11-metre swells, the mighty rush of water and the 120-kilometre-per-hour winds ripping through the superstructure, the feeling of weightlessness as the ship first hung in the air, then plunged downward to hit the surface again with an almighty boom, jarring every rivet, every tooth and every frayed nerve. Yes, maybe a combination of these things woke me. It wasn't the first time I had been woken that night. By this stage I hadn't slept through the night in over a week. What sleep I did get was 30 minutes snatched here and there when my body simply shut down. It was cold, uncomfortable, wet, and terrifying. I rearranged my pillows for the 20th time, searching for some combination of cushioning that would protect the top of my head, my neck, and my ankles from the fore and aft sliding along the bunk. But then I would have no protection from the side-to-side rolling of the ship, and my sides would be battered. They say people who have never been seasick can't appreciate the depths of despair it brings. It's not just an upset tummy. Everyone's heard the term green around the gills. It just doesn't capture the sallow, pasty sheen you turn when you're seasick. Plus, you feel a million times worse than you look. There are stories of cruising sailors locking up their sick crew, difficult in a small sailing craft, for fear they will throw themselves overboard. Death really does feel like a viable option. As I lay there, willing myself into a coma, I thought back to our training. 3 months in Hobart, accruing all types of skills, cramming checklists into our already overburdened brains, and weather testing our bodies. Our seasickness checklist came to mind. Ginger. Check. Glazed ginger between tongue and cheek now for 2 weeks. No effect. Water and dry food. Yep. Drinking lots of water and eating dry biscuits, which usually take about 4 minutes to reappear from the same place they went down. Stay above deck in fresh air. Ah, no. Can't do that. I'd be blown back to Hobart. Avoid anything that requires small motor skills. Does this include buttons and zippers? I can barely manage to speak, so anything as complex as buttons and zippers is out of the question. Lie down on your back near the centre of the boat. Check. That's not working either, for obvious reasons. Avoid strong fumes. This would include diesel, yes? A thin film of the oily stuff covers the cabin floor and my clothes and has leached into my hair. I can't avoid this. Showers aren't an option. Even if I wanted to relax standing under the hot water, I couldn't. It takes two hands just to hang on and stay upright. Level of difficulty, 4.5. Steer the boat. I'm not sure P&O Maritime Services, the owners of our expedition ship, would consider this appropriate. Swallow your pride. Thanks for that. Whoever wrote the handbook obviously had never been seasick. After half an hour, any pride I had is emptied into my bucket, which, by the way, is currently strapped to my wrist. So as I lay there, thinking, this did not end well for the Titanic, but you know what? I don't care. I worried how my team would perceive my weakness. On board were 24 full-time ship's crew and 120 passengers. Well, as far as the crew were concerned, we were passengers, but we considered ourselves expeditioners. We were professionals. We were trained. We had been chosen. We were going to live in Antarctica for a year, and I was their leader, and I was very, very sick. My close friend Graham Cook, the incoming station leader at Mawson Station, stuck his head in at some stage. "Can I get you anything, mate?" In my head I replied, "Yes, you can take your happy bloody sea-dog face out of my cabin doorway." But in reality I mumbled, "All good, Cookie, thanks."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?